One of my favorite things is when I'm really afraid to say something and I say it and then it connects with people.
Okay, my guest today is electric guitarist and punk rock poet Eva Cassell. Throughout her artist career, Eva has transitioned from acoustic folk singer-songwriter to now fronting a band with jazzy chords, melodic vocals, and a rock and roll attitude. She released her sophomore EP, Rinse Repeat, in 2022, which was recorded at Nashville's Welcome 1979 studio. The songs explore new love, complex relationships, and being a 20-something struggling with mental health in today's social climate. Originally from coastal California, Eva graduated from Berklee College of Music in Boston with a degree in songwriting. She's currently based in Nashville with a thriving career as a solo artist and a music educator. Since graduating from college, she's also gone back to teach songwriting at Berklee's five-week program. Does that sound right?
Yes. The only thing is it's actually not 5 week. It's just a songwriting intensive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's confusing.
Has that always been a thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I want to go to that songwriting intensive.
I know. I wish that I had done it. I did one when I was in high school that was vocal focused. It was called Vocal Summit. It was just like a week-long program.
Okay, so I guess they have like different themes.
Yeah.
Before 5 week happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is where we met. You and I met at Berklee while studying. I think you graduated a year before me, maybe.
Did I?
2017? I graduated 2018. Well, technically, I graduated and I finished in December 2017, but I walked in 2018.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I graduated 17.
Yeah. And we were both part of the first songwriting department leadership council songwriting nerd club.
Yes, that was
basically
the best.
Oh, with Aaron and Bonnie. Yeah. So that is how we met. And yeah, I've always loved your writing.
Thanks. And same to you.
Oh my God. But I don't know if I've heard your story, like your origin story. Mm. I mean, Justin and I actually, when we were touring around the States in 2019, your family, your parents so lovingly welcomed us into their home and we stayed in your childhood bedroom, like in your bed. So I, you know, I've seen all the posters on the walls. I know the vibe of your childhood, but what was it that like initially drew you to songwriting and how did that start for you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so glad that you stayed with my parents. They still talk about it all the time.
Are
my
you
mom
serious?
Is like, "Well, when Phoenix was here," and she's always like, "More of your friends need to come stay."
Oh my God.
You're always welcome.
It was truly such a pleasure, just to say, we were like staying in like shitty Airbnbs and shitty motels and cheap places and like eating McDonald's, like eating like
of course
the cheapest possible food on the road, and then getting to your hometown like just outside of San Francisco and having like this beautiful, like your house is literally like 2 seconds from the beach. Mm-hmm. And like your parents, I think it was actually just your mom because your dad was away, but
yeah,
your mom was like, "I'm going to make a home cooked meal of like fish and veggies." And like, she was so sweet to us and like so welcoming. And it was just such a contrast to what we were experiencing on the road.
Ugh,
it was the best.
That warms my heart. Yeah. She's the best.
She is.
That's so awesome. Every time I
cuddled
go home,
with your cats.
I'm so excited to eat her food and all of the like fresh California produce from the farmer's
it
market.
It was incredible. It's just, like, I can't believe she still talks about it.
Oh, yeah. So all funny. The time. All the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I was always drawn to music, even as like an infant. My mom has this story about walking through the airport with me and there was a live jazz band and she was holding me in her arms. I was, you know, months old, I think. And I was crying and crying and crying. And as she walked past the jazz band, I stopped crying and looked at the band and smiled. And then as she continued walking, I started crying again. And she was like, huh. So she walked back to the band and I stopped crying again.
That is classic. That's very on brand.
Yes, very on brand. And I was just, you know, I was just a dramatic kid, I would always make up songs, and I was thought I was a Disney princess, and I would wear princess dresses everywhere and like make up songs about bluebirds in the forest. That was my favorite topic.
That's Cinderella.
What?
Is that Cinderella? Very like bluebirds in the forest.
Yes.
Cinderella
Totally.
adjacent.
And Sleeping Beauty also has a scene in the forest.
There's just a lot of birds
So many
going
birds.
on in
It's
those
like
Disney
such a Disney
princesses.
princess vibe. Yeah, and I was always performing. I would like set up my stuffed animals in rows of chairs and put on shows for them. And like my parents and my neighbors and like anyone who would watch and listen. And I would just do that for hours. And then I actually started playing electric guitar before I played acoustic guitar, and I was in this band that had a teacher with a bunch of other kids. It was called Rockidstra, and we played a bunch of like Led Zeppelin and Steely Dan and Stevie Wonder and really cool stuff. So that was like my intro to guitar, was playing fairly like complex stuff and like playing electric guitar, taking solos and all of that.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
And yeah, and then I had kind of a falling out with that teacher, and then I associated the electric guitar with him, and so I decided to go totally in a different direction and do like an acoustic folky thing, which was great, and that felt really great for a long time. But then there was a certain point in college where I was like, man, this just isn't the whole picture. And then I got my Strat, and it was like, okay, we have arrived at Eva Cassell.
You were reborn.
Yeah.
So you didn't have or play an electric guitar really until college.
Yeah, so I stopped playing electric guitar probably around like 13. And then in high school, I got my Martin and I was like obsessed with it and pretty much just played acoustic guitar. I had a band with two other women. We did a three-part harmony, acoustic guitar, piano. And yeah, it was kind of like I couldn't play the electric guitar without associating it with this teacher, and he was like really awful to me and like guilt trippy and told me when I was 12 years old if I didn't work harder I'd be playing coffee shops my whole life. And I was like,
Oh, see, there's that trauma we were talking about.
exactly
It's like
exactly
you don't want to turn into Phoebe Buffay or whatever. Like, also, what's wrong with that? You know, everybody has their own path. There's this, I don't know, there's this thing about it's almost like it's been done before. It's like, oh, Joni Mitchell did that and that's over, and now you have to rock and roll and be cool and, you know, check all these boxes, and you can't just be like a folk singer songwriter or whatever. There's this trauma that's associated with that. But it's funny too how we hold like those formative experiences, especially with teachers and mentors, so closely without realizing it. Like when I started singing, I was put into singing lessons, and I was forced to sing musical theater songs, and like shitty pop songs that I didn't like, and I didn't have a choice. My teacher was like, "This is what we're gonna do," and I hated it, and so I stopped singing. I just didn't like singing for a long time because I didn't like what I was singing. I didn't like the musical theater songs, and now I don't like musical theater in general. Like I have this visceral reaction to it. And it's weird that it's like you can go completely full circle. Like you stop doing the thing that you were actually meant to do just because one person, you know, forced you to do it a certain way that you didn't like. It's like keeping you from the thing that you actually are meant to do. But it's nice that you found it again.
Thank God. It was really amazing to come back to it. But then I also was really struggling, and still struggle a little bit with feeling like I can call myself a guitar player. because I just had subconsciously, I think, his voice in the back of my head, like, you're not good enough, you're not working hard enough. And there's another show where I played Stairway to Heaven. I played the guitar part, including the solo, and I sang it with my brother, who was in high school at the time, because he needed a band. He wanted to be in the talent show or the Battle of the Bands or something. And I messed up a couple notes of the Stairway to Heaven solo.
Yeah.
And my teacher came backstage afterwards and he was like, I'm so disappointed in you.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
When and I that was probably 12. One of the first times you were performing too. You were probably so nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was performing with a bunch of high schoolers, you know, and
he actually said, I'm so disappointed in you.
Yeah.
That's like, that feels, I know that it's not, but it feels like child abuse.
I know. I know.
Like emotionally abusive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's That's so crazy. Fucked. Like I can't imagine saying something like that to a 12-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
He clearly has some issues, but.
There's a line between like taking yourself seriously and really sort of inspiring young students, music students specifically, to take their craft seriously and, you know, to be critical enough so that they can grow into a better musician. But it has to be accompanied by like words of affirmation, like, you know, I don't know. And, like, I experienced some of that too, where it's like, you could have done better. And it's like, I know, like, I did a pretty bad job and I'm feeling really bad about it right now. And you're making me feel worse.
Yeah.
And I'm also 14, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's such an impressionable age where you're already feeling like so weird, you know, and like trying to figure out who you are and like what the world is and what different things mean and like the weird feelings that you're having. And like, there's just so much going on. And I mean, that would be horrible anytime, but I feel like especially at that age, it's just like devastating.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And you carry it with you for your entire life, pretty much.
Yeah.
Until you dismantle that.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a village, though. So when did you start writing songs?
I started writing songs. I think I wrote my first full song when I was like 10. I wrote it for my grandparents. I wanted them to move to California. And actually had a really crazy chord progression. It was like not diatonic in the chorus. It was like really crazy.
Oh my God. Ahead of your time. Could you play it today?
Maybe.
You should revive the chorus.
Yeah, probably a little Joni Mitchell inspired. But I started writing much more when I was like 12, 13, and then a ton in high school. I had lots of unrequited love to write about. And boys who were shitty high school boys.
That's
write
the
about,
good so. Stuff.
Yeah, I know.
That's the heart stuff. So what was the first song that you wrote called?
I think it was called either California or Will You Come to California, that one when I was 10.
Aww.
For my grandparents.
Did you perform it for them?
What?
Did you perform it for them?
I did.
And then them and your stuffed animals?
Yeah.
And then they moved to California?
Mm-hmm.
So it worked.
It did.
Oh my God.
I mean, I think that was a few years later, but still I was like,
oh my God. Yes. Yeah, the 10-year-old guilt trip them. That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. Success story.
Yes. Yes. Young success story.
That is so sweet. Wow. And so when you were in high school, you were writing a lot more songs. And then did you just, was it like a natural transition to want to go to music school? Want to go to Berklee? Like, when did you start really taking it seriously and thinking like, this is what I want to do with my life?
I mean, I was always obsessed with music, like just obsessed since I was a little kid. But when I was really young, I thought, yeah, I want to do this. I want to be an actress or a performer, like probably something where I can sing and act and just like be on stage, be in the spotlight. In high school, or at some point, probably around that time where I had that awful teacher, I was like, I'm not good enough to make my life out of this, whether that was kind of conscious or subconscious. And I have this very visceral memory of hanging out with my uncle and his girlfriend at the time, who was his girlfriend at the time was from Boston. And we were talking about music and college. I think I must have been a freshman or sophomore in high school at this point. And she was like, oh, well, have you ever heard of Berklee College of Music? And I said, no. And she got really excited and was like, we're gonna look this up right now. And so she showed me the website. And I remember just being shocked that a school like that existed.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. I had the same experience where I'm like, this is a thing? I want to go here. It's like so exciting.
So exciting. Like,
this is the place.
So exciting. And not just, you know, for, because I knew that existed for musical theater and for classical voice, but, and I loved both of those too. I sang a bunch of musical theater and classical voice and loved those. But again, it was like, this isn't the full story. And this isn't, you know, just doesn't feel like complete. So then having Berklee, where there was all this contemporary music and songwriting and all of that, my mind was blown. And then I went and took a tour of Berklee. And again, I was just like, oh, this is my dream school. And then it was very clear to me, okay, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to go to school. I feel really great about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And did you know that you wanted to study songwriting to begin with?
No.
Or was that something that just came up?
I think I was really interested in performance and songwriting. But mm-hmm. When I first started at Berklee, I had no idea which one of those I wanted to do. But when I got there, I was honestly so intimidated by all the other vocalists. And I was like, who let me into this school? Like, I don't know mm-hmm. how to sing clearly, mm-hmm. you know? And so I stopped identifying as a singer.
Because it's tough. There's so many like powerhouse, like Ariana Grande sort of belters.
Exactly.
They're like really technical jazz vocalists that are just incredible.
Yeah.
It's really hard to compare yourself, especially as a singer-songwriter kind of type going to Berklee, because there's just so much technicality and so much talent.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. It's tough. And then it takes you, at least for me, being, you know, a few years out of college to understand like, oh, like we're all valuable. And just because I don't identify as a certain type of vocalist doesn't mean that I'm not a vocalist.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And now you're a vocal teacher.
It's true. And I feel like over the past couple of years, I've developed my voice to be what I've always wanted it to be. And teaching has been such a huge part of that, you know, just thinking about it all the time. And
do you enjoy it a lot?
I do. And, you know, I think still songwriting and performing and making records is where my soul is. Mm-hmm. But I've really come to appreciate teaching. And I love learning about voice and nerding out about it. And I've done a bunch more like professional development around being a voice teacher and learning about vocal health and all this stuff. And it's been really amazing just as a person, but also as a performer and artist. I've learned so much about mm-hmm. my own voice and how to take care of it. And I feel like I've grown so much as an artist from all of that work that I have done. So it is really cool to do something that, you know, even though that's not my long-term goal, to have it so directly feed my long-term goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm sure that you learn so much too. Like, I struggle with imposter syndrome when it comes to teaching because I'm like, I don't know anything. Like, I've never heard of music.
Yes, you do. You were on the leadership council.
It's so funny. Like, it's, you know, I can objectively see that it's not true and that I do have value in what I've learned. And I mean, we have degrees for a reason. But it's like when I think about teaching, I'm like, I don't know. I've never heard of music before. Like, what is that? I've never sang in my life. Like, I couldn't possibly like, you know, teach the youth of today.
Right.
But then I'm, you know, I try to look at it as like, you know, you have to start from somewhere, and teaching probably allows you to learn so much. Like, part of teaching is learning some of the things that you were going to teach. Like, I don't know if you've experienced that, where it's like you've probably learned so much from being a vocal teacher and a songwriting teacher, like learning from your students, but also learning what it is that you actually need to pass on to them, and like being able to organize that in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being able to explain something to somebody else is kind of a really good marker of how well you know it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because there have been times where I think I know something, but then when I go to explain it to somebody else, I realize, oh, I actually don't really fully understand this. But if I do fully understand it, then I can not only explain it one way, but four different ways, because everyone's going to receive that information differently. And now that's it's true. Like my understanding is totally cemented.
Yeah. Yeah, and you probably realize the things that you don't exactly know when your students ask you something and you're like, I don't have an answer to that question, or, you know.
Yeah.
And even being a teacher and saying like, I actually don't know this, like, let's look into it together, or let me get back to you, or something. That's so valuable too.
Yep.
To show like, oh, we're all just humans and I'm just trying to help you. And yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I've learned
and
so
how was
much.
It? Yeah, I bet. And how was it teaching at Berklee? Like, I know you've taught a couple years there at the camps.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's always so great for so many reasons. You know, I think part of it is like, I struggled with that same imposter syndrome while I was at Berklee, and also when I first started teaching. I was kind of, you know, felt like I was faking it till I made it. And now I feel like very confident in my ability.
That's
so
great.
To be able to go back and sit in these classrooms where I used to be in the student chair and now I'm in the professor's chair. I mean, that just feels amazing. I just love Boston so much. But the best part about it for me is being around all these kids who are so excited about music. They're not bitter and jaded about the music industry. They're not like, you know, they don't have debt because they're high schoolers. They're just like so excited and want to nerd out. And
and it probably reminds you how exciting music is.
Exactly.
Because like you said, it's like you're in the heart of the music industry in Nashville, and I'm sure there's a lot of bitterness, and I definitely experienced that living there.
Yeah.
And being in that environment with people that are so young and so excited about it, I'm sure like makes you more excited about it and reminds you how beautiful music is just like at the core level.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And being excited to learn too, you know, nobody's jaded yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's
and
no egos.
It's really helped me to seek out more people in Nashville who feel that way, you know, and I think there's such a good balance to strike between acknowledging the unfairness of a lot of the music industry and how many shitty people and like slimy people there are in the industry. But if I'm around people who are only focusing on that, it just brings me down so much. And it's already hard enough, you know, like I don't want to just focus on that. It's important to acknowledge it. But being around other people who are still so connected with, oh yeah, I'm doing music because I love it, because it feeds my soul. It's like a spiritual thing for me. It's the best thing ever, you know, that having that energy and lightness around it is so important too. And I think I have to have both, because also the people who are just in that camp of like, music is the best thing ever and everything's amazing all the time, it's like, okay, you're not living in reality. So it's gotta be a balance between the two.
Come back to earth for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I also think that, like, it is a good reminder. It's just like you picking your electric guitar back up too, is like, you have to fall, like, falling in love with music when you first fall in love with it is the feeling that I have always, like, I still search for that feeling when I'm writing or when I'm performing or playing music. And it's really hard, as you know, as you age and the more experience you have in the industry and the more experience you have of people not valuing you, or like you're saying, being bitter about, or, you know, XYZ. But yeah, it's like you have to get back to that original feeling of the magic of music.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's really important. And there's no, Yeba posted an Instagram post last month or something that, like, really resonated with me. And she was like, there's no point in creating music or singing or making music without God. Like, she's very faithful. And she's like, that's at the core of music for me. And when I'm not thinking about that, there's literally no point.
Mm.
Like, when you're not connecting to the heart of what music is for you, why are you doing it? You know? And yeah, I'm sure that that's lost in a place like Nashville, yeah, which is kind of one of the reasons why I didn't really identify with the city and the industry so much, is like working at a label and experiencing how little that mattered to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the process of releasing albums, it was like it didn't even cross their minds to think, like, what, you know, why is this artist doing this? Like, what is the point of this? It was all just like, you know, how does it look and how much are we going to sell? And, you know, like, how many seats are you going to fill and whatever? It's just like, it's disheartening sometimes. And I think you're right about, like, finding the people that are just doing it because they love it, because, you know, people are going to be drawn to that type of music. At least I am.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think those people exist and those scenes exist, but they can be hard to find, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also, again, it's another balance of the people who are doing it because they love it, but they're serious about it, you know?
Yeah.
Because then if you have people who are just doing it as a hobby, like, that's amazing, mm-hmm. You know, do that. That's great. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain, in terms of my community, there's a certain lack of relatability there, because it's like, this is more than just what I do for fun.
Yeah. This is my life.
Yeah.
My life's
this is like my whole life.
Do you find you've been in Nashville for a long time now. Do you find that you've created a community around you of people like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm familiar with your community and I think that you have personally, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I definitely think so. And people come and go, you know, it is really interesting, to see some people leave music and some people are really bitter about it and mm-hmm. feel lots of shame about, like, oh, I gave up, and other people are like, yeah, I changed my mind. People change.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
This isn't worth the sacrifice. And mm-hmm. I think that is such a healthier approach. But I get it, you know, it's difficult. But yeah, I do really feel like I've found a community, even though it's still kind of like in flux. And people come in and out of that. I do feel like there is a strong community of people who are really passionate and really kind and really driven,
mm-hmm.
which are all of the things that I'm looking for. And collaborative, mm-hmm. too, you know, not purely trying to compete with each other, but like, hey, let's make something amazing together.
Yeah. That's something that I found to be pretty tough in Nashville, was finding those people that are not trying to step on your head to get above you, you know?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people in our circle who were so, so sweet and so willing to collaborate, like you're saying, and really value you. And, you know, it's like a mutual understanding of, like, what the purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
But I did experience a lot of people just trying to take something from me, or, you know, it was tough. And in a place like Nashville where it's so saturated, like, I don't, you know, I don't blame them.
Right.
But it was just really tough for me to just understand and conceptualize that there are people like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just, my heart was hurting a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. And those people are, you know, they still exist. They still pop up in my life. And I think, you know, it's still so hard, right? It never feels good. Mm-hmm. It always feels like slimy and weird and bad. But I feel like the longer that I'm here and the more confidence that I have in myself and what I'm doing, I'm mm-hmm. able to say no thank you, you know, yeah. or like, that's so kind that you, you know, want to work with me. I'm doing air quotes for those listening. But I just don't have space, or that's not like aligned with what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. But of course, yeah, it's never feels good. It's really difficult. And I think there's going to be slimy, shitty people anywhere you go, like in most industries, but it just happens to be especially saturated in the music industry, where it's kind of like a cool kid contest.
It is. That is, you're so right. Oh my God, I've never heard it described that way, but it's so true.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about being a folk singer songwriter versus like a rock and roll chick. It's like, you gotta be the cool, you know, one of those is cool and one of those isn't,
right?
You know, right. Or whatever that perspective is. And it's like, well, I guess I'll gotta be the coolest of everyone. And it's, Justin and I were talking yesterday actually about how going to music school and being around just concentrated communities of like really incredible musicians, we're always told like, say yes to everything. Like, I had so many professors at Berkeley actually tell me that, like, say yes to everything, just do everything. And I did that for a while, and then I realized that I didn't want to do that. And then it was actually like a detriment to my integrity as a musician and how I see my value. And then I realized, like, I don't have to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
I can say no to the things that I don't want to do just simply because I don't want to do them.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just talking with a friend about this yesterday, and I think what those professors failed to say is, for a little while, don't close yourself off to opportunities, right?
Yes.
You know, like, fake it till you make it kind of a vibe.
It's even like the difference in the wording is like, really important.
It's everything, because saying yes to everything all the time is fucking insane. That's so insane. You can't say yes to everything all the time. Like, you're a person, not a robot. And, you know, it's just like, how can someone give me that advice, but then also give me the advice of, well, you have to pick a lane, you have to be in one genre, you have to have a brand. Mm-hmm. Those things don't go together. But
no.
So I think once you kind of establish yourself and make connections and figure out like what community you want to be in and who are your people, or what kind, you know, what is your type of person that you're going to try and cultivate, you can just tell, or I can just tell most of the time if I meet a songwriter who I'm just not vibing with and I don't think we're going to write a good song. I just, you know, most of the time I can tell.
Yeah.
For a long time I was doing those writes because I had that same thing in my head of say yes to everything. But now we're at a point where by saying yes to everything, we're actually not making space to move up to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also nothing against those writers. Like, it's truly just like, this is who I am. This is my voice as a writer. These are my goals. Like, this is who I am as a musician.
Yeah.
If we are, you know, if we clash, it's nothing against me and it's nothing against you. It's just simply like, this is probably going to be a waste of both of our times.
Yeah.
And you should probably, you know, spend your time writing with someone who, you know, vibes with what you're going for, and that's just not working out for us. It's like, it should be mutual, but sometimes it's tough and you don't want to, like, you know, hurt people's feelings.
Of course.
it's just truly just kind of a waste of energy.
Yeah. And not, and
like you said, you want to be able to move up.
Yeah. Yeah. And not everyone's going to understand you and what you're about. And I think that that is really beautiful, because then the people who do understand you and under, you know, get what you're about and feel connected to you, are going to feel so connected to you.
Yeah, exactly. And vice versa. Those are the people that you should surround yourself with too, because then you're going to create the most authentic and like the most powerful art. Yeah. Because you're surrounding yourself with those people that uplift you in a way that challenges you. And yeah, I feel like I've had this conversation with so many people, and it's a theme that comes up in a lot of the episodes that I've done at this podcast, where it's like you just have to surround yourself with good people who understand you and who challenge you. And like, you know, when it's like, if it's a producer or if it's like instrumentalist that just, you know, it's almost like they can predict what you're gonna do musically before you do it, and it's like, yeah, those are the people that you want to surround yourself with.
Yeah And the people who are really, really interested in what you have to say.
Yeah,
not just their idea of what you have to say, but actually what you have to say. And I feel like, mm-hmm, that is something that I run into a lot with other songwriters and producers sometimes, where they're like, oh, well, this is your vibe. And it's like, no, actually, that's,
it's like gaslighting.
That's what you perceive to be my vibe, but I'm telling you that it's not.
Yeah, that is so funny. It's like musical gaslighting. It really, yeah, is. It's like, this is what you want to do. And you're like, I actually don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. especially in co-writes when, so sometimes we're just writing a song and everyone's kind of like, okay, we're just trying to make a good song. But most of the time at this point in my writes, we choose who we're writing for. And when I'm the artist in the room, we're writing a song that is going to be cut by me, if anyone in the room. Mm-hmm. Of course, that can always change, but, you know, writing to that angle. Mm-hmm. When people get defensive about their ideas, in a way that's like, well, I think this is better. You know, another lyricist is like, well, you know, I think this line should be different. In another setting, I would say, okay, yeah, like, let's change the line. But when I'm the artist in the room, it's like, mm-hmm, well, that's not how I would say it. And
yeah,
that has to be prioritized, because if we're writing for me and I don't like the song and it doesn't feel like me, then we all lose, because I'm not going to cut it and it's a waste of, mm-hmm, everybody's time. Which you're not going to cut every song that you write ever, but it's just weird to experience that pushback on a level of like, no, you should be this other way, as opposed to a collaborative mindset. You know, it's not just that they're pushing back, it's like how they're pushing back and the defensiveness around it that's so, mm-hmm, strange to me, because the whole point of the collaboration is to bounce ideas off of each other. And you know,
it's tough. I co-writing is something that I always struggled with, like for so many reasons, including that, which is like, setting boundaries is really difficult. Being a pushover is very easy when you're writing, and then it ends up being, you end up writing a song or coming out with a product that you're not happy with. And I think any sort of co-writing environment, I think, is probably hopefully beneficial to you just through having that experience.
Yes.
But like I said, some are just really can be, in my opinion, like a waste of energy. And I really admire you for doing so many co-writes, because it's something that I have always struggled with, even like going back to high school, collaborating in my high school music program and in college where we had co-writing assignments. And I was like the person in the project that just like kind of sat back and was like, okay, whatever you want to do, because I hate this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It always was a struggle for me. And writing with Justin is a different story, I think, because we're literally married and so comfortable with each other. But at that point, it's also like we're writing for us, for both of us. And so there are times where it's difficult because we're both going to be releasing the song. And it can be tough to decide what technique is best used for different parts of the songs when we do disagree. But
yeah,
it takes a specific type of songwriter, I think, to be able to really thrive in those environments and to set the boundaries that you're talking about and say, like, this is, you know, this is my line that you're crossing.
Yeah,
especially when you're going to be the artist cutting the song.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the same is true of being in the other seat when I'm not the artist in the room and trying to strike that balance of, you know, I'm in the room for a reason. I'm not here to just, you know, exist, right? But yeah, want to be conscious of what the artist is trying to say, because I know how that feels. When someone is like, oh no, that's not good enough, and you're like, that's my truth that I've just said. So it is a really interesting dynamic. But I think something that, you know, you pointed out about you and Justin and how that makes sense to you is because you have that trust there, which is so hard when you don't have that built-in dynamic with somebody, when you're writing with someone that you hardly know, or even writing with a friend, you're not normally in that specific dynamic. So I think a lot of it for me too is just building that skill. And you don't have to, you know, I think co-writing is still not for everyone. I recently looked up a John Mayer song and just saw, you know, writers at the bottom, John Mayer. I was like, oh yeah.
You know, you're like, that they still exist.
Such a thing. And I've come to think of co-writing and solo writing as just two separate spaces in my mind. And they're both so important to me. But they kind of almost like live in different worlds because there's such a different experience.
Yeah. And it is true, especially when you're coming into a co-writing space with an idea that maybe is really vulnerable. I think that's the mistake that I made early on when I was sort of challenging myself to co-write a lot, where I would be like, you know, I have this idea about my grandmother you know, whatever, so personal and so vulnerable, which can absolutely lead to like incredible songs if you, like you said, have that mutual trust going on.
Yeah,
but it is tough to be in the environment where you're writing about something so vulnerable and personal, and then an idea is just like, you know, just completely shut down.
Yeah.
It's very like, my heart can't take it sometimes.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's an important skill to develop, to be able to have thick skin.
Yeah. Yes.
You could say thick skin, referencing one of your songs.
Totally. But, yeah.
Yeah. It's not for everyone, let me tell you.
Yeah. But I've learned there are certain ideas that when I have them and I write them down in my little song seed note, I'm like, okay, this is a Noah co-write, or this is a Susie co-write, or this is, you know, specific people in mind. Or this is so personal and so vulnerable, and this is a solo write.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good place to be. Like you said, you've just like surrounded yourself with people that uplift you so much that you can have an idea where you're like, oh, I think that Noah would be really good to collaborate on this with. Like, that's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah.
I wanted to, speaking of vulnerability, one of the things that I've always noticed about your writing since college is how vulnerable it is and how lyrically specifically your songs tend to be so personal, which is something that draws me to them, and also so detailed sometimes in like the context of what you're writing about. Maybe not every single one, but I've noticed that in your lyrics, and I'm just wondering, is that like, have you developed your lyric voice to be specific and personal and vulnerable and just like kind of putting it all out on the table? Or is that like, have you always written like that? And like, is that something that's really important to you as a writer to just like put it all out there?
Big yes to all of that. So
you're just smiling and nodding the whole time.
That's so awesome to hear all of that. I feel like I am finally able to write in the way that I've always wanted to. When I started writing songs, I thought that I was being really personal and specific and vulnerable, but looking back on those songs that I was writing, a lot of them were really vague, and which is not bad at all. And some of my favorite artists have really vague lyrics where there's no clear storyline. Like Elliot Smith is one of those. He's one of my ultimate favorites. But he doesn't often have a clear storyline, even though they are vulnerable, I guess. But I think it's the thing that feels the most authentic to me. And it really is a way that I process my life and my feelings and what I'm going through in a way that I can make sense of it. And a lot of the time when I start writing a song, I'm not sure exactly what direction it's going to take. But then I figure out how I feel about something as I'm writing it. And so it's this really cathartic way for me to process whatever I'm going through and take one piece of my life, like one tiny fragment, and just blow it up into this beautiful distilled feeling. And that's, I think, another thing that I've worked really hard on, because I used to feel like I had to put the whole context into a song. I couldn't just write an angry song about something or someone because, you know, maybe the full context is I'm angry at them, but I also love them. But learning to just focus on the anger and write a song about that, and then focus on the love and write a song about that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, have this whole song be about, I don't know how to hold this duality. But just zooming in and thinking of it as just one snapshot. And I think that's helped me get a lot more detail-oriented. And I really think of songs as like one distilled feeling.
I think that it also, I draw a parallel between that and also just like mental health and like processing your emotions. Like, it feels like, you know, there is the approach to songwriting where it's like, oh, it's like therapy. But a lot of people, I think, are very vague about the ways in which their like mental health is associated with their writing or like their music creation. And it feels like that also could be something that is talked about in therapy, where it's like deconstructing your feeling about this thing that you're going through, where it's like, are you, you know, you have love for this person, let's deconstruct that. Or you have anger also, let's deconstruct that. And just like you said, like zooming in on those feelings, which feels like literally like a technique to process emotions, which is, it's crazy that you're doing that in your writing, because I've never thought about it that way before.
Wow. How do you
think I should probably it? Writing? Like my mental health with writing? I think I'm a little more vague about, I don't know. This it's like, it's funny because I think it probably is reflective of like my mental health in general, where I don't really know what's going on.
I mean, most of the time. I relate to that for sure.
I'm like, I don't really know. I have this thing of, you know, I don't know how to feel. You know, I tend to like suppress my emotions a lot of the time, maybe out of trauma, definitely out of trauma.
Yeah.
But like, I think sometimes, you know, I've actually been thinking about this recently a little bit, because I have had some pretty big feelings that I've been wanting to explore writing about. But then I sort of stop myself where I'm like, I shouldn't write about that. Like, it's too personal, you know, or, which is crazy to think about. But I think like it's freeing to just say like, this is something that I'm experiencing. This is a feeling that I'm going through, and I do want to zoom in on it, and I do want to deconstruct it and write about it. Even if you don't end up, you know, releasing the song, I think it's important for like our mental health as artists to be able to explore that and physically sing it and get it out and express those emotions, because I'm bad at expressing my emotions a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I'm singing it, I can. But I think I'm not very conscious of how I'm writing when I'm writing. And then I just at the end have a song, and then I'm like, oh, what is this? You know, and then I explore it. Which can be a good thing and a bad thing.
Of course. I think that's beautiful too.
But I think it's a bit all over the place.
Yeah. And I just thought of a couple other things as you're talking about this idea. I think another reason why I am so specific in my writing is because I often feel like in the moment, I don't know how to describe how I'm feeling. I always come up with like the witty comeback so much after the fact. I'm just not quick-witted gal.
And then you just say it. You just say it, and there's no context.
Right.
You're like, haha.
But I also have a pretty severe learning disability, and so it takes me a really long time to process things. And so I think I've never put these pieces together like this before, but I think songwriting is my way of being able to really like slow it down and process it for myself, because in the moment I can't. Mm-hmm. And it often takes, not often, but sometimes it takes years. You know, I'm writing songs now about people that I dated in high school, and
I do the same thing. And then I'm like, why am I still thinking about this?
Because it had such an impact, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important. It's important to just ride that wave and see where it goes sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, kind of like we were talking about earlier, that is some of the deeper stuff that you can get to when you're at a more healthy baseline. Mm-hmm. But the other piece that I think really had such a huge impact on me as a person and a writer was hearing Alan Shamblin talk. Alan Shamblin is one of the writers of I Can't Make You Love Me.
Mm-hmm. And was this at the Nashville trip, 2017?
Yes. And he said, our deepest insecurities are the most universal. And that just hit me so hard. And I thought, that cannot possibly be true. That can't possibly be true. I'm going to experiment with that. And I'm going to think about what is something that I am so unbelievably insecure about that I feel like no one else will understand. And I'm going to write about it. And I wrote the song called Pretty Girl. And
you performed it for John Mayer.
I did.
Told you that you were pretty.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that was a highlight of my life. Watching that happen. It's so true, though. And probably every girl and, you know, probably every person did relate to that song, because nobody really talks about it, or maybe not in the way that you were writing about it.
Yeah.
And it feels like no one can relate to it.
Having that experience of people connecting with it, it was like, oh, okay, how can I do more of this all the time? And I feel that way about my relationships too. You know, I feel, even though it's terrifying, and I've been hurt so badly by so many people so many times, it's still so worth it to me to be vulnerable in my relationships, because that's the place where I really feel connected to somebody else. And if I'm able to kind of put myself out there in a really scary way, sometimes it crashes and burns and feels horrible. That's worst case scenario. But best case scenario, someone else says, you know, I see you, and or I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And so much of, I think, life and also music is about just connecting with other people.
Yeah. I think that's at the heart of it for me. And it is true that I've experienced that as well, where I'm like, nobody could possibly relate to this, or it's too specific. Like you're saying, it's like, I have this specific insecurity, or I had this specific experience that I want to write about, but no one's going to relate to it.
Yeah.
But I think listeners, like, even if the lyrics are so detailed, for this specific experience that you went through, I think they put their own spin on it. And those insecurities are actually universal. And I think it's scary for me to write from such a vulnerable place.
Yeah.
Not so much because I'm like, oh, I don't want people to hear me say this, but because I'm actually physically scared of saying it.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't want to admit this, or I don't want to admit that I feel this way, because then I'm going to have to like go down the rabbit hole. This is like a metaphor for life also. And just like,
just it makes it real,
mental health. But yeah. And I think that those things are probably going to be what really resonate the most with people. And I think it's, you know, every writer is different, but for people like you and I, it's like so important to be open to that and be open to admitting those things in your writing.
Yeah.
For yourself and for the people that are going to be listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I really think that my best songs, but how can you even qualify that, you know? But one of my favorite things is when I'm really afraid to say something and I say it and then it connects with people.
Yeah.
Feel less alone.
It's kind of funny because of the text that I sent you last week, where we hadn't talked in a long time, but I've been following you online and on TikTok and everything. And I watched this video of you. I don't know if it's a new song, but you were playing a song on your rubber bridge guitar. And it was, I say this because I read the caption and I know what it's about, but it's about like becoming a mom and the vulnerability of, I think one of the lyrics was like, is my body not useful unless it's, I forget exactly what it is. It's like, my body isn't worth anything unless it's used or something. And it's about, I just resonated so much with that song and it actually brought tears to my eyes. Like I started crying because I was like, I can't believe it was, the lyrics were so vulnerable, and a lot of the feelings that you were expressing in the song were feelings that I have experienced, and probably a lot of women, especially young women, you know, it's like getting close to your 30s and being like, this is something that I have to, you know, just come face to face with in my life. And it was so vulnerable, and it was accompanied by like these beautiful chords that really like, I think were perfect to capture the feeling of what you were expressing. And I don't know, you probably didn't, I don't know if you like assumed that it was going to resonate so, so hard with people, but it just like hit me. And it also made me think of feelings that I probably am suppressing myself, where I'm like, oh yeah, like that's crazy and scary. And like, not a lot of people are writing about it, you know? And wow. I could tell that it was coming from like a really deep, vulnerable place, which also probably is why it hit me so hard. But yeah, it's just important.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, that's a perfect example of a song that I wrote where I was like, is anyone going to get this? This is, it felt so specific to me and my experience. And, you know, it's so easy to feel like I'm the only person going through this right now. Everyone else has their life figured out and they know if they want to have a kid or if they don't, and they don't feel, you know, horrible about wanting to be kind of selfish and not wanting to give up, you know, all of their freedom. I feel like some people are like, how could you be so selfish to, you know, not
fuck
want
those
to be
people.
A mother or
fuck
or
those
whatever.
People.
Yeah, fuck those people.
Excuse my French, but fuck but those also, people.
For a long time, I was like, I don't want to be a mom, because I thought, I think I texted you about this too. I thought that if I were to have a kid, I would have to be a mom in a very specific way. That I would have to, this is so, I mean, it reveals like things that I didn't realize I thought, you know, until I was kind of processing this and writing the song. Again, it's like helping me figure it out. But I thought, oh, well, if I were to be a mom, I would, you know, I wouldn't be like stylish anymore. And I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't have
so funny.
Any freedom. And I would have to give up my whole career. And, you know, things that are like so old-fashioned that I would never think that I think about myself.
This isn't the 60s anymore, Eva.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to have to be in the kitchen with my poodle skirt on making a loaf.
Yeah.
For my kids.
I will only wear stretchy pants for the rest of my life.
I'm going to have to stop playing music. Can't play music anymore.
Can't play music anymore. I will be boring. That's another big fear of mine, that I will be insufferably boring.
I do not think you could ever be boring.
Thank you.
Just to preface.
But, you know, it's crazy that I had all those thoughts without even realizing it. And then I, for whatever reason, probably because I was at a place in my life where I thought, I think I'm going to get married in the next couple of years. And my partner at the time really wanted kids. And that was like a deal breaker if I didn't want kids. And so I really had to think long and hard about it. And I realized I do really want to be a mother, but I am scared about all of the things that I'll have to sacrifice. And I didn't even realize that I felt that way. Anyway, that was.
Yeah. And it's crazy to write. Like, I feel like it's writing also allows those feelings to become transparent. Like, I truly think that when I'm in the right place, when I'm writing a song, it just happens. Like, I swear I will write like full sections and just black out and then be like, oh, this is how I feel, I guess, you know. Like, you just black out and then there's three verses and you're reading it. I'm singing it and I'm like, oh, this is, I feel this way. Like, it's almost like somebody else is like telling me how I feel in the process of writing a song. And it's like the most beautiful part of writing to me. Sometimes I'll even like watch myself singing a song and I'm like, oh my god, that's how I feel. And I'm like, then I'm like, that's me.
It
I
is
wrote
crazy.
That it doesn't feel like I did.
Yeah I totally know what you mean. And really... I have that experience too. So that song that we were just talking about, I actually wrote it at least a year ago.
Oh, wow.
At least. I played it a lot when I first wrote it and then kind of went through a period of not playing it. But I recorded it. And it's going to be on the EP that I'm releasing
oh,
in the fall.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to hear it and just cry.
But now I'm like reconnecting with it. And I still, even though I wrote it a year ago, it's still so relevant. Even though my life has changed so drastically, I still feel that way so much. And the song is still true, even though the context for me and my life around the song isn't the same.
I'm so glad that you did, because it really just hit me like a freight train.
Thank you for saying that. That's so great to hear. Yeah. I mean, and again, that's that connection piece, you know, where it's like, that's what this is about, really. Like, that's what songwriting is about to me, is feeling connected to myself and connected to other people, and and really, really being present and experiencing my life.
Yeah. And I think that, to me, even if a song connects with one person, I'm like, that's my job has been done, you know. That's all I need. Like, I just need one person to say, I really connected with this. It doesn't need to be, you know, the masses. I mean, that would be incredible, but it's like, that's, it's like the Lord's work,
right?
Like, I'm doing the Lord's work out here, like allowing people to actually connect with their feelings. And I did want to say, on a weird note, but when you're talking about like being a mom equals not being cool, there's this woman that I follow on TikTok. She must be in her mid 60s, and she's such a badass. And she talks about her life, and she's so cool. She seems like, she's kind of like Bonnie a little bit, but she seems like a California, like, cool chick, super great fashion. She does like fit videos and stuff. And every time she comes on my page, I actually think of you, because she reminds me of you.
What?
And I'm going to send her to you. I don't know if you follow her, but it's funny that you say that, because I'm like, I've had the thought so many times, this is what Eva's going to be like when she's older. Like, she actually, her energy resonates with your energy to me.
Oh my God. Okay. I follow a woman who does like a lot of like getting dressed videos, who's in her mid 60s, who I think is so cool, and I'm so inspired by her. But I don't know.
That's probably the same person.
I wonder.
Maybe. She's got like salt and pepper hair.
Yeah.
She's a badass. She like
tattoos.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you.
That's what I want to be. Years. Oh, that is so awesome.
I think you will be. That is so fun. I was like, well, because I was like, she probably already follows her. I have a feeling.
When I found her, I was like, there is hope for me.
Yeah, that's going to be you. I swear. That is so funny.
That is so cool.
Okay, so I'll round out our interview here by asking you two questions. The first is, what advice would you give to your past self in regards to music or songwriting? And the second part is, what advice would you give to your future self?
Oh, wow. My past self, I would say, don't be afraid to try things. Just try things on, you know? I think there was a point where I was really afraid to try new and different things. And that held me back for a long time. And now I've kind of re-entered this kind of fuck it phase where I'm like,
amen,
I'm trying shit. And it feels really good, because a lot of the time I surprise myself and I'm like, I can do this, like producing or playing bass or guitar for other artists, or, you know, anyway, so I think
it's being out of your comfort zone kind of just is in alignment with that as well. You know, I think we're all kind of scared to dip our toes into cold water in regards to things that we've never experienced before, but like you said, you can surprise yourself and you can find things that you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
And if you would have never tried it, you would never have known.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think with that, there are certain things that I know in my gut that I do not want to try, because I do not, that won't bring me joy. I don't want to be a mix engineer. I know that about myself. I want to be able to lay a blueprint and get my ideas down. But I, more than that, I don't need to try to do that. You know, like, that doesn't bring me joy.
And that's knowing yourself too. Or you can try things and be like, I don't like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like, I don't like that. And then it becomes just added to the list of things that you know that you don't want to do.
Yeah. I guess maybe even a better, more distilled version of this advice would be, don't let fear hold you back.
If you
want to try something, but you're really afraid, but you really want to try it, do it anyway.
I love
Maybe
that.
Maybe that's a more succinct way to say that. And for my future self, I think I would say, don't forget how far you've come. I feel like I made this joke the other day that I'm a grower, not a shower. I really think that's so true of my journey as an artist and a songwriter. You know, like getting to
My God.
Berkeley, like I was not a, like I didn't get a huge scholarship. I didn't get any scholarship. I, you know, was not in the best ensembles. I was not chosen for like the showcases until later on in the songwriting department. I kind of hit my stride and then I got some scholarships and stuff for that. But coming into Berkeley, the point is coming into Berkeley, I was not at the top. I was like middle, maybe lower than
Lower
middle.
middle class.
I was a rating 2, I think, which is like the lowest that you can
Oh
get.
my God. I think I was, I don't even remember my rating. I all my friends were doing the whatever audition or the re-audition for your rating. I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, I was like, fuck that. I'm not going through that shit again. Like, I'm not gonna do that whole process again for them to tell me, like, oh, you're still a two, bitch. Like, you know, I just, fuck that, fuck that. But the point is, I worked my way into the Songwriting Leadership Council and taking Advanced Lyric 2, which is invite only, and doing that clinic with John Mayer. And, you know, I started low and I fucking worked my way up. And I feel the same way about Nashville. There are venues here that I cold emailed 10 times. They didn't get back to me. And now I can be like, hey, I want this Saturday night. And they'll be like, for sure, here you go. You know?
Amazing.
And it's just like so easy to only be looking ahead at what I haven't done and not looking behind at how far I've come. I think most humans struggle with that, but I need like daily reminders.
It's really tough. I forget which song it is, but one of my songs, I have a lyric like that, where it's like, I don't celebrate my accomplishments. Like, why don't I celebrate my accomplishments? Like, this really vulnerable song that I was writing about how I'm always like in this mode of self-pity, looking at all the things that I haven't done or the places that I haven't gone or, you know, the ways that I've let myself down in my career or in my life. And then on the flip side, I'm like, why don't I celebrate my accomplishments, the things that I have done? Like I sometimes don't do that. You know, even Justin, he's releasing an album on Wednesday and it has 17 instrumental tracks. Like, and it's like a total, like an avenue that he has never gone down before. And I've watched this happen and I've like listened to him record all the songs and like grow as a musician to be able to do this. And then the other day he's like, yeah, it's not really that exciting. I was like, you just wrote 17 songs and are releasing an album in a genre that you've never even created before. And it is a big deal and it is very exciting, but I see it in him and I see it in myself and all my friends of musicians, this community of musicians where it's like, yeah, it's not really a big deal. And it's like, it is. Like, it's a really big deal. And if you 5 years ago saw you doing this now, he would be so proud, you know? And it's so true. Like you, it's very important not to forget where you came from and how far you've come.
And I would so much rather be the type of person who's constantly learning and growing. I never want to hit a point where I'm like, I've gotten as good as I'm gonna get, you know? Like,
That is so funny. I don't think you ever will. And it's funny that I love that I'm a grower, not a shower. That's you are a songwriter. That is a beautiful metaphor. But I think it's funny because even like when I was texting you last week, I have noticed and I've seen your growth even from afar. Like even just in the clips that you post and the songs that you're writing, it's like you don't need to be flashy about it. You don't need to be so focused on, you know, all the great things that you're doing. It's like, it just shows, like, if you, as you grow as a person and as a musician and a writer, I think if you're just honest about who you are, like, it really does show. Yeah. Like, I hear your voice and the progress that you've made as a vocal teacher, and I hear your guitar playing. Like, it's crazy, and it's just very obvious to see objectively. But I don't think that you would probably ever internalize that and be like, oh, I've grown so much, and I really am an incredible guitar player, and I approach writing my songs in a different way than I ever have. But, like, that is all true about you, because you're just doing the work to grow. Anyway.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's really, really nice to hear.
I'm glad it's true. It's true. And we all need to remember that as songwriters, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, and I think especially in, you know, it, making music is not about making money and being famous, but we're kind of fed this idea that it is, and we're all kind of waiting for our metaphorical blue check mark, you know? I think that's part of why we don't give ourselves credit. But again, I don't think it's unique to music. I think that's pretty human, but maybe amplified in the music industry. Like, oh, if I don't have X number of streams, so just that whole, like, looking at what you haven't done and comparing yourself to other people, because we don't have this, like, validation of followers or streams or money or whatever. But again, I know that's not unique to music.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, like, validation can also be like something like someone connecting to your song.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is so much more important than having a certain amount of followers or a blue check mark. Like, it truly, if someone comes up to me and is like, I thank you so much for writing this song, it means so much to me, I listen to it all the time, whatever it might be, it's like, that's the validation that I need in my life, because we're all just human beings trying to navigate this weird industry and this weird existence.
Yeah.
And that's so much more important to me than, like, numbers on a spreadsheet. I hate numbers on a spreadsheet.
Completely, completely agree. Yeah. And I really feel like in the past couple years, I still struggle with it. You know, it's not that I've, like, made it and now I feel great all the time. But there's been a very big shift around, I just want to enjoy my life. And a huge part of enjoying my life is writing songs that I love and performing them, whether that's for one person or 1,000, you know, or 5,000 or 10, you know, like, whatever. I writing songs brings me so much joy and helps me to enjoy my life more. And that makes it worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so tell people how the best way is to support you.
Yes, the best ways to support me are to follow me.
You're like, matter. I don't care about Instagram followers, but at Eva Cassell Music.
But I do. I post a lot on Instagram and a good amount on TikTok. I also have a newsletter that I am trying to cultivate more of. It's kind of has a personal piece and a musical piece, and I'm trying to include just things that I consume as a person, whether it's a recipe or a TV show or a song or
Nice.
And I like to share a lot of my friends' stuff on there too. So the newsletter is a great way to connect, and Spotify as well. I've got an EP coming out with the first single out, hopefully in the fall, and I'll be rolling out a bunch of singles after that.
Beautiful. And the newsletter is just on your website?
Yes, newsletter's on my website. And my handle on socials is Eva Cassell Music. Cassell is 2 S's, 1 L. And
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eva's music is incredible. Please do support her. And her new songs I'm just so excited about. So, yeah.
Me too.
Thanks for doing this.